Welcome to Science Talk. I'm your host, Cynthia Safranik. And on today's program, we're going to talk about new challenges to the immune system and learn what we can do to bolster that system of protective cells and biological soldiers that's hard at work right now defending you against invading pathogens. For the most part, your immune system does a great job of keeping you healthy and preventing infections and diseases. But it isn't easy. In fact, there's a constant battle going on as you're exposed daily to an assault of germs, viruses, and bacteria. And now and then, it loses the battle to colds, flu, and sometimes worse. The flu affects more than 100 million people each year. Together, we catch nearly a billion colds, and allergies are also on the rise. Today, 38% of Americans suffer from allergies, twice as many as experts had previously thought. We're also under attack from environmental toxins, and I haven't even mentioned new threats to our health, like new flu strains or weakening immunizations. No doubt about it, the immune system has its work cut out for it, and we need to be constantly vigilant. Some viruses and bacteria can live for 20 minutes up to 2 hours or more on surfaces, like cafeteria tables, doorknobs, and desks. Basically, every time you eat at a restaurant, shake hands, hold on to a grocery cart, grab a phone, open a door, take the bus, you're potentially making contact with pathogens committed to breaking through your physical barriers and immune system. And we're not helping much with our stressful lifestyles, poor dietary habits, not enough sleep, and lack of exercise. All of these things can challenge the body's defenses, as can the aging process. It's a big, important topic, so let's get started. And I'm very excited to welcome a special guest who is joining us by phone today. Dr. Anne Moscona is Professor of Pediatric Microbiology and Immunology and Vice Chair for Research in the Department of Pediatrics at Weill Medical College at Cornell. She conducts research on respiratory viruses and new strategies for antiviral drugs and has been published in the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of Clinical Investigation. Dr. Moscona has also been featured as an invited expert speaking about influenza on national television, including ABC World News, CBS News, CNN, as well as on radio programs like NPR, Bloomberg, and BBC. Her research on parainfluenza virus has been funded by a series of prestigious awards, including continuous grants from the National Institutes of Health. Also joining me in the studio is our own Les Wong, Senior Director of Shackley Health Sciences.
Hi, Cynthia.
I want to start out with a little background on the immune system, specifically the lines of defense that our bodies put forward to keep invaders out. And then, Les, maybe you could explain the difference between nonspecific and specific immune responses. I assume that refers to the immune system's plan of attack once a pathogen gets past the initial barriers.
Right. Well, let's start with the body's first line of defense, physical barriers like skin and mucous linings. They make up a pre-layer of defense to keep foreign microorganisms out of the body. But more than just a physical barrier, the skin and the mucous membranes that line the body's portals are also rich in scavenger cells. So that's basically the first line of defense. Microbes attempting to get into the body must first get past these physical barriers.
So then what happens if an invader breaks through?
Well, they have to elude a series of nonspecific defense mechanisms. These cells and substances are called nonspecific because they attack all invaders regardless of the fingerprints they carry. These include patrolling scavenger cells like macrophages and neutrophils and various other enzymes and chemicals. Interestingly, if a cell is infected by a virus, it secretes a substance called interferon. Interferon is a remarkable chemical that activates natural killer cells and helps block viral replication in cells not already infected. So essentially, it keeps the intruder corralled while other cells join the battle. The nonspecific defense is absolutely essential to our health, and a good many potential infections are cut short because they're intercepted by the nonspecific immune defense system alone.
And what about those that aren't stopped?
Infectious agents that get past the nonspecific defense must confront specific weapons tailored just for them. These include both antibodies and killer cells in an intricate system of defense mechanisms. Working together, they enable your system to recognize, remember, and efficiently eliminate or neutralize potentially harmful foreign invaders such as viruses, bacteria, fungi, and other organisms.
And so that becomes our immune system's specific response to invasion or infection.
Right. Nonspecific immunity helps eliminate infections by rapidly eliminating bacteria and viruses at first contact, while specific immunity involves invader recognition, memory of identifying traits, and specific targeted response to neutralize the invader.
So when we get immunized against a disease, that creates a specific response. That is, once our body has been immunized, it remembers that particular invader, right?
More or less. You can get a special formula vaccination for specific strains or diseases, like flu or polio, for example. Or in many cases, if you've had the disease before, your body produces its own specific immune response. That's why new flu strains and other infections can be so risky. We don't have an immune response to them, and they're so new, we haven't yet created a vaccine.
Dr. Moscona, I know you've done a good deal of research on this subject. Can you give us some background on how our bodies fight the flu and what happens when a new strain arises?
Every year, we have an epidemic of influenza. And every year, up to about 20% of the world comes down with influenza or the flu. And it can actually be a serious illness. But our bodies can develop immunity to it. We also know how to develop vaccines against the virus that comes every year. And we also have some antiviral drugs that we can use against it. We have some strategies. Now, every few decades, the flu virus undergoes a much more major change. And that's called an antigenic shift, meaning that the molecules on the surface of the virus swap so that they're so different that our bodies don't recognize them at all, and we have no immunity against them. And so those brand new sort of shifted viruses can really spread around the world and cause much more disease. And that's referred to as a pandemic, a new-looking virus that our bodies don't recognize.
And that's essentially what's happened with the avian flu. Human viruses and bird viruses were circulating around each other at the same time and had the opportunity to mix in some fairly remote areas of Asia.
But the much bigger concern even would be if this avian flu mixes with a human virus in such a way that it could then really be able to infect lots and lots of people and spread around the globe and cause a pandemic. And that's what we're most worried about and really trying to understand how we could prevent.
It seems that there are more dangerous strains of flu now than ever before. Why is that?
Well, what happens is that new viruses and bacteria and other pathogens that exist in animals, usually there isn't that much proximity between animals and people. And as civilization has sort of advanced and as we have more and more close contact between animals and people, coupled with the rapidity of travel around the world so that a virus can spread around the world in 24 hours, we now have these new organisms that are going from animals to people and then rapidly spreading around the world instead of just sort of dying out where they started.
So global travel has exacerbated this potential threat.
Absolutely. Immunity has become a global issue because we're literally jet-setting pathogens across international borders every day. That didn't happen in past decades.
So when it comes to avian or bird flu, how much should we be concerned? I mean, no one is suggesting we stop eating chicken, right?
Cooked poultry, turkey, chicken is absolutely fine. There's no danger from eating cooked meat. The danger in terms of getting bird flu has been in people who have been really closely exposed to poultry. They've been living with poultry. They've been taking care of poultry or working in the poultry industry, or they're playing with uncooked bird parts in their yards or working with them in their homes. There's been absolutely no reason to be concerned about cooked chicken or cooked turkey.
Well, good. Now, because these flu strains keep evolving, is that why the flu shot we got last year doesn't necessarily protect us this year?
Well, a lot of people want to know, why is it that we have to get a new flu shot every year? Why doesn't the flu shot from last year protect me? And that's because every year, the flu virus changes just a little bit. It's still flu. It hasn't changed completely. But it's really smart in a sense, in that the surface changes enough so that our bodies don't recognize it well from year to year. So every year, about 10 months before we get the shot, scientists in Asia are figuring out what they think the next year's flu strain will be, and they start the process of making the vaccine for the next year. So every year we have to get a new flu shot, because if we've been vaccinated this year, next year, we're faced with a pretty different virus that our bodies won't recognize very well.
And I just want to say here that it's really important to get your flu shot. Right now, if you haven't already, it's one of the best ways to bolster your immune system during the flu season. It's also a way to ensure the drug companies keep making enough vaccines to protect us in the years to come.
The government and vaccine companies have to figure out how much vaccine to make. And if people don't go out and get their vaccine this year and don't decide to protect themselves against seasonal flu, then next year, when we may have a really severe winter of influenza, we won't have enough vaccine. So for so many reasons, it is important for everyone to go out and get their vaccine, vaccinate their children. An important thing to remember is that you can't vaccinate babies under 6 months old. So the little babies are really vulnerable, and they should be surrounded by people who are protected, who aren't going to bring influenza home and infect the little babies, because they can really suffer with it.
Same goes for the elderly, who can be especially vulnerable to the flu. Anyone who cares for seniors, whether at home or in care facilities, should get a flu shot.
Well, since we're talking about immunization, something that I found troubling recently was the news about new outbreaks of whooping cough and mumps. Weren't we all immunized for those diseases? And are we now finding out these immunizations don't last?
Let's take the example of mumps. Mumps vaccine is a really good vaccine, but even so, it's only about 95% effective. And probably as people get older, their immunity is going to decrease and the effects of those vaccines will wear off. And we're really in the first or second generation that has received this vaccine, and we're trying to understand how long the immunity lasts. As we've begun to understand more about immunity and the effects of vaccination against mumps and measles, we've begun to recommend a second shot so that people are receiving mumps and measles vaccinations twice. And this is why it's really important that if you have a preteen, 11 or 12-year-old, who's only had one mumps and measles shot, they should be revaccinated with a second shot.
Well, that's good to know. Now, another hot topic, especially out here in California, was the recent outbreak of E. coli bacteria in spinach grown in the area. Bacterial infections pose a unique challenge to our immune systems, don't they?
Absolutely. And this most recent outbreak brought home just how important the intestines are as a part of a healthy immune system, especially how important it is to keep a healthy balance of good bacteria or probiotics living in the gut.
So the intestines really are another important line of defense for the immune system.
Correct. And there's a good bit of research showing that probiotics can have a number of positive local effects, as well as some key overall effects on the immune system. In the gut, probiotic bacteria are thought to occupy binding sites on the gut mucosa, preventing pathogenic bacteria from adhering to that mucosa. Lactobacilli in the intestines also produce what are called bacteriocins. They act as local antibiotics against pathogenic organisms and decrease production of pro-inflammatory cytokines. They also stimulate IgA antibody production, and lactobacilli produce acetic and lactic acids, which inhibit the growth of bacterial pathogens. Another way that probiotics may help is by competing with pathogens for nutrients. They may also modify toxins produced by pathogens or toxin receptors found in the gut wall.
I had no idea how much work probiotics do. It sounds like they're absolutely essential for a strong immune response. Dr. Moscona, anything you'd like to add here about probiotics or other ways we can bolster our immunity?
Our bodies have evolved the best mechanisms of all for fighting infectious diseases, and we should let our bodies do their work and give them the maximal potential to do that work. And so some of the most important ways to do that are by maintaining really good nutrition. Nutrition has been shown in many, many studies to be absolutely essential to good immunity. Taking vitamins is an important part of that. And also maintaining proper intestinal health is really important because it's important in itself for fighting off gastrointestinal bacteria and viruses and other infections. But it's also important to be able to absorb the types of nutrients that are especially important to the immune system.
That's right. If your intestinal tract isn't functioning with the proper balance of bacteria, it doesn't matter how many vitamins you take or how well you eat. You won't absorb nutrients as efficiently.
There's been a lot of attention to new viruses and bacteria that are emerging in the world. But I'd like to point out something equally serious, which is that By overusing and misusing antibiotics and antibacterial agents, we're creating a situation where even the old familiar bacteria are not going to be curable. Because by doing that, we're selecting for bacteria that are just going to be resistant at whatever we throw at them, and they're going to be more virulent and cause worse disease that we can't fight. So it's so important to not use antibiotics unnecessarily, not use antibacterial agents freely, because in doing so, we're going to encourage the development, the selection of bacteria in the community, in our families, in our households, that are just going to be impossible to eradicate.
So instead of helping with these antibacterial products, we may be doing much more damage in the long run. And since we're talking about ways we can be proactive, let's talk about the things we can all do to help meet a couple of pretty common immune challenges. And I'm talking about colds and flu because, as you heard, Americans catch roughly 1 billion colds a year. That's roughly 2 to 4 for adults, 6 to 10 for kids. And as Dr. Moscona said, about 20% of the people in the world get the flu every year. What proactive steps can we take?
There are lots of things that people can do, and I'd just like to start by saying that the best way to prepare yourself for the possibility of any unexpected pandemic or new infectious disease is just by following the really good health practices and practicing those right now. Get in the habit of hand washing and sneeze into your elbow. Don't spread respiratory viruses around. Make sure that your nutrition is really top shape. Take vitamins. Get enough sleep. Be in good health so that your body is in the best possible position to fight off any virus or bacteria or other agent that might come our way.
Exactly right. In this case, a great defense is the best offense. Don't go to work when you're sick. Stay away from other people who are sick and take your vitamins. Sleep is also necessary to keep your body functioning at its best, and getting enough sleep at night is really essential for a healthy immune system. And don't forget to exercise. The body's just not as healthy and as fit to fight whatever may come its way without good exercise.
I can't emphasize strongly enough how important washing hands is to preventing spread of viruses and other infections. People sometimes don't like to do this. If they come in your house to see your baby and you say, wash your hands, they think, oh, are you saying I'm dirty? But really, the most important carrier of germs into the household and infecting children and babies really is on the hands. So if there's a way to explain this and protect the people that we love from getting infected, that's the number one way to do it.
Wash our hands often, and don't be afraid to ask others to do the same. Get plenty of sleep, exercise, eat well, and take our vitamins. We're adding those things to the list, too.
One thing that's very important nutritionally in terms of the kind of nutrition that the immune system needs to be strong and healthy is a very balanced and varied diet. And one of the reasons for that is that nutrients and micronutrients and vitamins and minerals are just present in so many different foods and food groups. And I think that as we get farther and farther from being connected to the food we eat, that becomes harder and harder to do. And I think that this is why it is important to pay attention to supplementing in such a way as to be sure that we are getting all the nutrients that we need, even though there may be times when, despite the best intentions, our diets are not completely balanced.
Great advice. We're definitely heading into that season, and the more we can do to prevent and protect, the better off we'll be.
Before we close, and while we're talking about conditions and diseases primarily affecting the respiratory system, I'd like to ask you, Dr. Moscona, to tell us a bit about some interesting research I know you've been doing on respiratory viruses. Specifically, I know you've been focused on how respiratory viruses affect children.
We're interested in studying respiratory viruses, especially those that infect children. And we're interested in this for several reasons. Number one, because these viruses cause very severe diseases sometimes in children, like croup and pneumonia, bronchiolitis. And also because we believe that sometimes serious respiratory virus diseases in childhood can lead to asthma and other wheezing problems in later childhood and later in life. Viral infection in the lung is a very delicate balance between the immune responses that are needed to fight off the virus and cause the child to get over the infection, and then inflammatory responses that can even make the disease worse and narrow the airways and cause kids to wheeze. So we're very interested in understanding what it is that helps promote those good immune responses that actually fight off infection, and then what can tip you over into a exaggerated or what might be considered a bad immune response that actually makes the disease worse.
Well, thank you for sharing what clearly is very important research. And again, it's been an honor to have you on the program today. So much fascinating news and inside information. We thank you for joining us. And of course, Les, thanks for helping make this another great Science Talk. We'll look forward to your next visit. And that's all for this edition. But don't go away, folks. Coming up next is an important product profile with important information about three terrific Shaklee products that definitely belong on your must-have list this time of year. Stay tuned.